Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. One of the things that my closest friends and even some of my family know about me is my love of extraterrestrial myth and the evolution of human consciousness. For me, the two go hand in hand, or to put another way, are different sides of the same cosmic coin. I started looking into this stuff when I was young. Crop circles, Roswell, Galactic Federation, secret space programs, and all of this stuff entails. And patterns started to emerge over the years. I found others that could see the same sorts of things and would often communicate using telepathy and other psychic arts. I've never poo-pooed any of the intuitive arts. I love mystics and creative types and intuitives and the psychically gifted too much. I have enormous respect for those that go the road less traveled to bring something valuable back to the village. Are you following me? With a natural love of myth, hero's journey, and humanity, the extraterrestrial myths have followed me over the years, a constant companion waiting for me to receive and share. We are very much in that moment right now. In fact, I believe we are in the later innings of disclosure, to use a metaphor from my favorite sport. Today's conversation is far-reaching and meant to meet you where you're at on this topic. It's not looking for complete agreement or abandonment of your beliefs. It is simply looking to open your mind to truths that may be standing right before us, waiting. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Nancy Dutertre. Nancy is a former attorney who is now one of the world's leading experts in remote viewing and psychic phenomena. She is a gifted mystic, a true psychic detective, and the co-director of the Institute for Exoconsciousness. Here is my interview with Nancy Dutertre. Okay, I'm here with Nancy Dutertre. I know that's a rough pronunciation, Nancy. Gifted psychic and teacher, mystic Nancy Dutertre. Nancy, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, I was so thrilled that you were game. I did a show with a friend of yours, Rebecca Hardcastle Wright, who's in the consciousness, exoconsciousness kind of field. I've been, you know, trying to get a few more voices around this particular topic, which I'm very, very fascinated by. We're going to get into all of it. I've been fascinated for a very long time. But before we really get started, oh, by the way, you have a tagline on one of your websites that I love. It says, helping you demystify the unknown. I love this tagline. I think it's brilliant. But you're welcome. Yeah. And I guess I wanted just to start, just give us a little bit of a background about maybe where you grew up, where you live now, your family, how much family you have, and kind of what you do for work now.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the fast version is, growing up, my family moved every 2 years, so I have lived in virtually, I've lived everywhere. I lived also in England, France, and Germany, but I've lived all over the U.S. I'm currently living in Connecticut. I've been here for 3 years. Spent a lot of time in New York and also New Jersey. Let's see, what else? Family is, I have a peculiar family. They're doing their own thing and I'm doing mine. But not very extended family, except my husband, who is French, comes from the second oldest family in France, and every time we go over to France, we are surrounded by like a cast of thousands. They're all over the place. He's got huge family, so that compensates for my sort of minuscule, next to nothing family. And we have a couple kids, and Yeah, I guess that's about it. In terms of what I do, I mean, that's sort of I always talk about my so-called career. It's probably not like too many other people's careers. I've owned and operated a bunch of businesses from, very small to multi-million dollar. I am an attorney specialized in securities litigation and corporate law, although I did a sort of very sharp turn off of all of that when I decided, I don't know, a long time ago that I wanted to write a book about it was going to be the psychology of intuition. I figured,
I
okay,
like that.
and I come from, very, very intellectual, academic, scientific family. My father was a medical scientist. So I thought, yeah, okay, I can. I did a lot of research, spoke with a lot of people in psychiatry, psychology, neuroscience. I studied like crazy. Anyway, none of those guys knew anything about intuition, nor were they interested at the time, although that's changed a lot since then because now we've got the use of brain scans and stuff like that. So then I spoke with the only people that had any concept of what intuition was, which happened to be these weird people I'd never spoken with before called psychics. And then ended up on this sort of crazy journey. I was apprenticed as a psychic detective for about a decade. I'm trained in everything. I'm not a natural except for maybe medical intuitive and energy work. But I'm trained in virtually every single one of the psychic arts you can think of.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I've been blessed really since the New York City days to have really gifted psychics around me, either as friends or people that I have studied a bit with or done sessions with. You mentioned that you moved every couple of years. I just was curious, was your father in the military or was he in corporate? Like, what had you relocate every 2 years? That's a little unusual.
Yeah, everybody always asks me that. The answer is doctor with a bad temper.
Oh, okay,
Yeah,
that makes sense. That's not what I was thinking, but yeah, that would have you move every couple of years too. So, well,
I understand. I get it.
Hey, well, I was wondering, the first question I was curious about is, because you do have a very unusual background, especially having the intellectual lawyer legal mind as a background. Usually that will exclude people from being psychics. Most of the psychics and people that study consciousness and mysticism, they're usually from the other side. They're usually from the empathetic, the heart-centered, usually a little more woo-gee-woo, and how they're artists and creatives and they're drawn. That's kind of an easy jump for them. It seems much more of a challenge to go from, thinking in terms of legal and law and intellectual into this other realm, which makes you very unusual. But when did you kind of start to get interested in what I would say is consciousness or the esoteric or the mystical or the intuitive arts, however you want to frame it? When did that start? Was that as a kid and it kind of lurked around as you pursued these other things? Or did you have a little bit of an aha moment later on in life where all of a sudden you were in contact with maybe somebody that had those gifts? Like, how did your interest in the esoteric, intuitive arts, psychic phenomenon, extraterrestrials, all the different stuff, how did that spark first begin for you?
I was not at all interested. Just I had zero interest. They didn't exist because in my family, none of that stuff existed. None of it. So if it doesn't exist, you're not going to be interested. You're not going to talk about it. There's nothing. So no, this was purely something that happened because I got interested in the psychology of intuition. I'm also trained and certified in something called intuitive gestalt psychotherapy, which I've been doing for, I don't know, maybe like 35 years or so. And that's what got me thinking about consciousness in general. And I've always been interested in psychology, but that's different, when you figure people out. But I look at everything like puzzles, and you're absolutely right. Most people who are in very sort of academic intellectual fields, like lawyers, where you're thinking logically and rationally and all that kind of stuff, you have to. And I ended up in this book I told you about that I was working on, called Psychic Intuition: Everything You Ever Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know. I ended up explaining to people. It was supposed to be a bridge, but people who don't believe and people who believe, but they have no clue why they know the stuff they know. To explain to them, in terms of neuroscience, psychology, and linguistics, why psychic ability exists, and I had to explore it like I don't know, like an astronaut, like I'm looking at something I've never seen before. Because it was all new to me. And you're 100% right. The way that you think, I mean, I was very much a thinker from thinking in the head, not the heart. I was early on, I was taught, that emotional stuff, you better get rid of that. That heart stuff, what is a heart? So, I came about this whole thing from a completely different angle. And by the way, maybe because this is your sort of focus, at least to some degree, on men, I think maybe a lot of men would understand what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I'm probably of the intuitive, creative type, right? But I remember, a lot of the topics that we're talking about, they existed over there. I kind of always maybe believed in the magic, like there was some sort of higher consciousness. I thought there was more to God than the Catholic Church was leading on. Like I kind of thought it's probably a little more sophisticated than that. And when I was young, I remember seeing pictures. The thing that really hit me over the head like a gong, really, and led to everything else, in my opinion, was when I first saw the crop circles in England, and I was just godsmacked. Like I it there was something about the beauty, the design, the fractal geometry, it looked like I was looking at some eternal wisdom and language, and I seemed to kind of understand it in a way, like my being godstruck by it was the intended impact of the language. And I remember I was working in a restaurant in New York City at the time, and I brought these pictures in. And nobody could see them. Like they were all like, I remember the comments were like, I don't know, some two drunk guys with a lawnmower probably created it. And I'm looking at the perfect sacred geometry of, and the size was like three times a football field. And I'm like, you can't be serious that you think two drunk guys and a lawnmower created this, And I remember, thank goodness, my friend Cliff, who's still a good friend of mine, looked at it and said, I don't know how you look at that and not believe in God, right? I was like, finally, somebody's like seeing what I'm seeing, And I think that kind of opened it up for me. I think after that, there's something happened to my mind. I became much more receptive to all the things that maybe you started to get interested in. Now, obviously, my path was a lot different, but all of a sudden, the psychic realm and people that were gifted in prophecy or people that could remote view, all of a sudden, all those books on the shelf that maybe I ignored because I'm like, I don't know what that stuff is. All of a sudden, I was finding myself gravitating towards certain books and it was starting to make sense, but I always credit the crop circles with being the kind of spark. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, of course. I got very actually. I took my husband over there a long time ago, long, long time ago. I was very interested in because I want to know what the heck are these things. And I found there's a it was sort of the unspoken headquarters where all of the crop circle people would hang out in England. And so we went there and hung out by the bar. And we ended up meeting a guy who he was very, very interesting. He was a crop circle maker. Now, he was English. He said that when he had seen these things for the first time, he was astounded. It was blown out, like you. It's like exactly what you're saying. And so he essentially sold everything he owned, got enough money together to go down to this area in southern part of England, where they are known to, I mean, that was sort of the I guess you could call it a ground zero for crop circles, and it
Sure.
still is to some degree.
Yep.
And what he learned was he said he started this out saying he was deeply disappointed because he discovered there was a group of, I don't know, I think he said somewhere between 40 and 60 really hardcore crop circle makers who were going around making these things. And he said he was so sad he couldn't believe it. He was disappointed and everything. And so finally he said, okay, fine, I'll participate in this and whatever. But he began to learn some very interesting things, such as when, because they would come up with these very sort of brilliant creative ideas, for the crop circle formations. And he said he would dream about something and find out the next day that one of the fellow crop circle makers had had the identical dream. Or when he had decided to make a crop circle, did it in one field. In the next field, one of his friends would have created the same circle. Or that those lights, those little orbs that fly over the circles at night when people aren't really looking too much, when they seem to be creating the circles, that he began to realize that those orbs were very much involved in the creation process. And so I went, it was very strange. And I went into one of his crop circles. And yeah, it was okay, but it was not the quality of the kind of stuff that you see. And I remember it was Doug and somebody else with their, not a lawnmower, it was a flat board that they'd
Yeah, I remember seeing
kneel
that.
down on. And it was terrible, the disservice that they did, because crop circles, it's not an easy phenomenon. It's very complex, and I think, like so much of these other paranormal realms or psychic realms, there is absolutely an interaction between, let's say, human consciousness and some other form of consciousness that can affect actual reality. I'm a psychokinesis practitioner, and I worked with scientists, American scientists, for a couple of years, and then I trained in Russia. And so I've been able to do some things that I know, like anybody knows for sure, like bending a piece of solid steel rebar in half, fully folded. It's impossible. You can't do it, and yet there it is. It's done. It's possible. It melts. And so I understand that consciousness has real and definite impacts in our physical world and the way it manifests.
I saw a set of, because you're right, there is a lot of people that make them or teams that make them, and some of them are pretty good at this point, but I remember there was a lot that were made. People had claimed to make them, but they were always kind of ratty. They weren't really quite symmetrical. They weren't quite as beautiful, let's say,
Yes, I agree.
or elegant. And so
Yep.
it was a way to say, oh, people are making. I think for a lot of people, they're like, oh, people are just making these, so I don't really need to pay attention. Because certainly the way that I was seeing it, for me, I was like, I don't think people can create this, period. I don't
Oh, yeah.
think.
No, they're extraordinary.
Yeah, and so then as I started to dig in, because a lot of them were giant, like a football field, two football fields, and they were created in the middle of the night, like in darkness. All of a sudden the farmers would get up and say, "What the hell just happened out in my field overnight?" And it would be this perfect, sacred geometry symbol that is like you'd have to have a computer to create the symmetry that was created in it. You couldn't really do it with a flat board running along trying not to break the wheat stalks or whatever, right? And so, for me, I never really paid that much attention to like people saying, I can create that as well. It's like, okay, well, the fact of the matter is there's thousands of evidence before anybody got in the game. There was a whole bunch. And the rumor was always in my tribe or in the conversations was that it was created with sound, you know. And so you can surmise how that was done, whether that was the orbs that you were speaking of. Was it created by, you know, some kind of super conscious mind? Was it with Galactic Federation ships? Was it Pleiadian, Sirian? Like people say all kinds of things. Probably natural for people to want to emulate and see if they can do the same thing. But I think anybody claiming that they were the original crop circles and it was somebody with, I don't believe that at all, just because I remember all of those crop circles. And then all of a sudden, here was some human created ones. And I was like, that is a poor, poor replication of these, you know, this 300 first ones. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. It's a mixed bag, and people tend to be very black and white about stuff, you know? People think, oh, well, it's either all made by something that's supernatural or it's all made by humans, and you know, never the twain shall meet. But I do believe they're being done by both, and I also think there are collaborations between both. And the kinds of incredible crop circles that you're talking about, I mean, they got fancier and
I
fancier as
know.
time went by, to the point where you say that's just not even possible. You could do some pretty amazing things with a piece of string tied to a pole in the center of a circle. You know, you can do all kinds of very interesting and create sacred geometry off of that. I mean, that's yeah. But these things, they were the real ones that I'm talking about and that you're talking about. They're finding the crops have only certain nodes are broken or regrowth, and there's also radiation. And that's not from some, you know, people walking around, you know, with their lawnmower. You
No,
know?
no. Hey, I want to ask you, since we're on crop circles,
Yeah.
is it a, I always was kind of curious, like when I look at them, I feel like it's a language, like, but I can't quite figure out what it is. The whole point of it to open up human consciousness to higher dimensions. Is there extraterrestrials that are trying to communicate with us? And this is kind of how they plant the seed. Do the symbols mean something that we quite don't quite understand if we meditated on them, or we got a team of really great psychics to work with them? Would it lead to something else? I've always been kind of curious about that.
Well, and you're not the first person. I mean, people have, you've got mathematicians who have been able to create new mathematical equations out of some of them. And yes, I mean, symbols are a language. I wrote another book called How to Talk to an Alien. And one of the things I start off the book with
That's
is,
a great title, by the
oh, thank you.
way.
But I start out talking about the crop circle that was created in response to the Arecibo message that was sent out. Nobody expected an answer for 40,000 years. And, you know, like 15 years later or so, I think it was, I forget what year it came back. But anyway, there was a return. You know, they had created the Arecibo message that got sent out was in radio wave format, which is kind of, you know, humans use it, but it's totally outdated and it's slow. And it
What did they
basically,
send? What was the message? Was it a like a math thing that they sent, or?
it was a pictorial illustration done in pixels, okay, in a 10 digit, using 10 digit sort of coding format. There were seven sections and it was divided up, basically telling the aliens or the ETs out there, you know, this is us. We're humans. This is what we look like. This is what our radio telescope looks like, or our receiver. This is what our DNA is comprised of. You know, these are certain basic elements on Earth, you know, stuff like that. And the message came back, you know, as I said, like within 15 years in a crop circle. And it was identical in terms of the picture and the shape and the seven layered format, except that it came back with, a picture of a little gray guy instead of a human, and came back with something very interesting instead of a radio telescope. But yes, it and I languages are kind of my thing. I speak about, well, I'm working on my fifth one right now. And so I like language, and I can understand a lot of other languages, even though I don't speak them or know them. And I know the importance of certain symbols, and that sort of leads you back into the direction of Jung. One of my favorite books was his book on mandalas. And that is a form of communication. And we are being told things now. But what I was wondered was, would humans use the same symbols to communicate? And I think some cases, yes, and in some cases, no, with crop circles. And, so do I know for a fact that it's coming from, some distant galaxy or some particular group of ETs? No, I don't claim to know any of that. But I do think that it is a communication. And when you don't speak the same language, you use symbols. And the only issue would be is if you're living, let's say, on a different planet where none of your images or symbols would be the same as those of people living on a different planet, then it gets much more difficult. You need the equivalent of like a Rosetta Stone.
Do you, Nancy, do you think we're, you hear a lot in the ET community, different, thought leaders and influencers. I know there's a whole mixed bag over there. I'm sure you're quite aware of the different types of ways they see this. But are we on the brink? Like I've chatted with people like Rebecca, your friend. There seems to be kind of a few different camps. There's a camp that's it's almost like a biblical thing, like disclosure is almost going to be, like the apocalypse or the rapture or something. Like it's come, there's going to be this really dramatic moment of cosmic disclosure, or our, our a reveal of the Galactic Federation, or our extraterrestrial allies, perhaps, is another way of saying it. But there's another group, and I'm starting to go into this camp a little more, is that it's basically we're already in disclosure, where it's happening. I mean, I'm doing a podcast about the topic. This is not my first one. I'm just a little DIY podcaster in Seattle. There's literally hundreds of thousands of people having conversations like this all over the planet, starseeds, intuitives, people that have, have all kinds of stories and remembrances and are steeped in kind of this myth about the extraterrestrials, whether that's Pleiadians or, you name it, they've and there's more of us now than ever, and people are getting very comfortable talking about it matter-of-factly, which tells me that consciousness is having an upgrade, and that maybe consciousness has its own timeline. The soul, certainly, the soul's journey is a slow-moving one with lots of time, lots of places to stretch out and learn lessons and stuff like this. So I think there's a part of us humans that like to see things really fast. Like if we're going to reveal corruption and let's do it all, tomorrow. If we're going to have a reveal about extraterrestrial life and our maybe secret collaboration that we've been collaborating with these groups, and just tell us the real history and do it in a 1 month period so everybody can get up to speed. But that's not really how information works. I'm starting to learn more and more that having patience and letting things, let everybody have their truth and let it moving slow. But I remember Nancy, or not Nancy, you're Nancy. I remember Rebecca saying, we're basically already in it. This is what it looks like, conversations like this, and it's going to happen slower. And so I've kind of pump the brakes a little bit on what I might expect to happen in my lifetime. But I'm still very optimistic that more and more people are going to understand this in the next, say, 20, 30 years than do right now, let's say. So I know I just gave you a lot, but it's kind of a question of, is there going to be a big reveal that everybody's like, holy crap, or this is kind of how fast things move?
Right, I understand. I'm a very old person, okay? So I remember way back, way back when everybody was talking about, well, is it going to be disclosure with a capital D or a little D? Okay? And disclosure with a capital D essentially referred to, government disclosure, like what Steve Bassett has been doing for decades, trying to lobby members of Congress and get the government to reveal like that either we've been dealing with ETs or that we've reverse engineered their craft or that they've been able to create other craft and they're creating a myth around it in order to protect those types of technological secrets or whatever. I know an awful lot of people. By the way, Rebecca and I are co-directors of the Institute for Exoconsciousness. She has done a fabulous job with it and has been able to sort of put together a beautiful community of experiencers so that experiencers can talk about, well, who are we and how do we interact in sort of the world that we're in, okay? Sorry, I got off track here.
No,
So,
that's perfect.
disclosure with a capital D is sort of the government saying, "Yeah, we know that we kind of we pulled it, we goofed on you guys for about 80 years. So sorry about that. Yeah, we didn't quite tell you the truth. Oh yeah, we kind of mocked you and made fun of you while we were at it. But yeah, you're right. That's not ever, ever, ever gonna happen. Okay, so." It's not going to come from the top down, although what's been, and I'm also old enough to have watched enough fake disclosure with the capital D's come down the pike and then dissolve into nothingness and usually all kinds of petty disputes and, that one's not telling the truth and this one's not sharing and blah, blah, blah. And they go nowhere. Do I think that all of this legislative, excitement that they're, ooh, we've actually got Congress people talking about this now and people giving congressional testimony about certain aspects of disclosure, but they can't talk about most of them because it's all, they would violate their oaths if they said too much. So, yeah, we're still kind of stuck. I don't think that ultimately that's going to go too far. You still have, as everybody knows, there's a very strong group in the military, particularly top levels in the Pentagon, who believe all of that stuff is awful and demonic and needs to be stopped. There's that. But then you have another echelon, let's say, who they know what needs to be remain hidden in terms of military assets. And they're certainly not going to reveal any of that stuff, even if they don't think it's demonic. Okay? So, which means we are now in the middle of disclosure with a little D. Little D means that it's just people, talking about their experiences, what they've seen, what they know. And it's sort of a, if you imagine living in a place of just word of mouth where people share. That's where we are. And what is so interesting is now that we have, real mass media, the internet, and all of that, it's becoming obvious, even to people who don't pick up books and read them, to know that this stuff is occurring in every single country, every continent on the planet, and has been reported. Not just for decades, I'm talking centuries, millennia even. And people are just starting to say, oh, okay, so you mean that's not just like that, crazy stuff? No, it's not the crazy stuff. It's actually real stuff.
I think you're right. I actually don't think it really matters what the government does.
at this point. They're more of a hindrance to the awakening than anything. I don't think waiting on senators to say, are we going to tell them about this? It's like, I don't really care what they do. I think my loyalty is with people, with humanity, and I think humanity is figuring it out just by talking amongst themselves. I think the global village is talking a lot about these topics, and I think they're starting to get a pretty clear picture. Sure, there are some differences, but I think the overall upward ascension of information and kind of I think when I grew up, if there was any talk about any of this stuff, it was kind of like, because I grew up in the Cold War, it was like, there's gonna be like some alien invasion and da, 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 and then it was like you became aware that, oh, they could false flag some sort of scary invasion. Now I'm just like, I don't think any of that's gonna happen. I think people are sharing information all over these platforms, and they're getting a pretty clear picture within themselves. I think their inner knowing is getting stronger, and I think more discerning about what they see. One of the things I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that you had kind of became kind of a generalist in the psychic arts. I'm paraphrasing what you had said, but I guess my question is, because I kind of see the exoconscious or the awareness of extraterrestrials, how that might play out in your own kind of field, that if you got better at one of the psychic arts, maybe you're really intuitive, maybe you have moments of clairvoyance or telepathy, maybe sometimes you're like, I feel like I can sometimes kind of read minds a little bit. Like, why do I know that she was going to say that? Or why, like something might be growing in you in ability. Does that translate into some of the other psychic arts? Does getting, like, let's say, for example, a young woman got really interested in this extraterrestrial conversation. Maybe she went to a New Age bookstore, she found a book on Pleiadians, and she's like, oh my God, this is resonating with me on a level that I don't remember anything resonating. So she does this deep dive and she starts looking on the internet and all the Pleiadian stuff, and that really becomes an opening for her own expansion. Would then now, because there's an opening, would she become more, let's say, receptive to getting better at remote viewing? If she took a remote viewing class after that, would she be kind of primed to start to receive information that maybe her mind was closed off to? Does that make sense to you, what I'm trying to ask you?
Oh, sure,
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling you already know the answer to this. All of the psychic arts are connected. I had no idea of that when I first started out my own journey. I thought by exploring intuition that led me into this realm of psychic work. And as I said, I worked as a psychic detective for a long time. And I thought that none of this psychic stuff had anything to do with paranormal. I thought that was a whole entire separate field, so that, like, I would on TV, the ghost hunter guys and,
Yeah. Nancy, when you say psychic detective, were you working with the police? Do I have that right? Like where they were bringing you in to maybe a crime scene, or do I have that wrong?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Okay. Yeah, good.
And, it's funny because it didn't really occur to me. I've trained as a spiritual medium with the spiritualist church, and she, the reverend there, had allowed me to sort of join into one of their advanced mediumship groups. And at one point, I forget what I said. I was probably just annoying her, but I said something. She said, "Oh, Nancy, no." That you're not a medium. You're just a psychic detective. And I thought, oh, okay. And then I kind of went home and I said, wait a second. What do psychic detectives do? Well, you connect with the spirits of the victims, and which is called mediumship,
Exactly.
and
Yeah.
you may connect sometimes, I mean, really icky, with the perpetrators also. But what that made me realize was, okay, yeah, there's this weird crossover between the plain vanilla psychic and these, fancy sort of upper crust spiritual mediums. Well, yeah, we're all okay. And I started saying that I didn't think that any of that stuff could be trained, but actually, yeah, it can. I'm living proof, for what it's worth, for anybody, that all of these things can be trained. And what I have been doing for the last, I don't know, 13 years or so is teaching various types of remote. I'm trained in all kinds of remote viewing, and I created my own type of remote viewing for a number of reasons. But I've been teaching that for the last 13 years or so. Before that, for about, I don't know, 5, 6 years, I taught in the New York City tri-state area. I was teaching psychic skills and spiritual mediumship skills.
That's really.
Anything can be taught. And what the bottom line, to get back to your original question, is if what I show people is you have to change what I call your style of thinking. It's a particular way that we're all taught how to think, and it is based on, well, it's linear, rational, analytical thought, but linear because even like when I start the sentence right now until the time where I get to here at the end, boom, I've used up 5 seconds or 2 seconds of your time. It's linear in terms of time. You have to begin to understand how to gather data in a completely different way. And I got published in some scientific journals, peer-reviewed, on some very interesting relationships between psychic individuals and autistic individuals, and the difference between what we call, neurotypicals and different ways of thinking. And the most difficult people to convert into an understanding of psychic data or paranormal phenomena or any of that stuff are those who are extremely bright and extremely well educated. And they're the most stubborn and the most difficult to get through to because you've got to change the way they think. And once you start thinking differently, yes, you're absolutely right. All of these different types of phenomena will suddenly start to happen to you. I thought after I got through psychic and paranormal, woohoo, I'm done. No. All of
You're
a sudden,
gone.
my daughter and I had a massive UFO sighting and communication that was done for close to 2 years with us. I didn't ask for that.
Yeah.
But I
You're
think once you, what I tell people is if you learn how to think differently and to expand your conscious awareness, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have to be anything different, just change your conscious awareness factor. Suddenly, you're weirdly and counterintuitively, reality becomes bigger and stranger because you will begin to experience it. Where before that, you're walking around like a blind person.
Yeah, it's funny. I've had kind of like where you said you studied the two things and that was it. It's I think there's a tendency. I have the same thing where I'm like, okay, I just did this deep dive into this, extrasensory or extraterrestrial, exoconsciousness, whatever the area is, and then I feel like, okay, I probably am good, for a lot, but it's never, it's always the next piece of information. I don't really see that ever ending. Like I'm 58 years old. I'm just as curious as ever. And I'm also less afraid of, I think when I was younger, I didn't want, it was a little fetish for me, right? I wasn't a lawyer like you, but I also didn't want, I didn't want to be talking about this stuff all the time because I was like, my friends are going to think I'm a nut job because I, for some reason, I'm 10 times more curious than most of my friends about these things. They're more curious about what the football team's going to do next year. And I'm doing deep dives into extraterrestrials, Pleiadians, crop circles. And then when the internet got boomed out, I was like, oh my God, look at here is all kinds of stuff I've been looking for. And but it doesn't end. Like I really can't. My wife's built the same way. My wife's still, she's just so curious and so smart intuitively. And just make sense of patterns. So I just don't see the learning ever stopping. I think thankfully, I think it's meant for us, because I'm somebody, I don't know about you, I get sometimes a little, I'm a homebody, but I get easily bored. If I don't have things I'm kind of trying to figure out and learn, I think I can get a little restless. And then maybe I'm behaving in ways that, when I'm bored, I'm not a great version of myself. I think I'm better when I'm curious and all those things. But I wanted to ask you, what kind of work, you're the co-director along with Rebecca of the Institute for Exoconsciousness. What kind of stuff are you two doing? Like, what is that about right now? What's happening in that organization, and is there anything new going on that's like that you would like us to know about with that?
We sort of do different things. She comes from a therapeutic background. So her thing is very much sort of connecting with people and creating community, which is phenomenal. She's been she puts together groups of people so they can exchange ideas. The whole point is, and she's a futurist. So she's very up to date on sort of new developments in the state of our planet, our species, other species, and what's happening. And I tend to also get put into that direction. Although I would say my contribution is different. I've worked with her for several years on setting up various legal aspects of the organization, and recently was very involved in creating a planetary constitution to preserve human consciousness, because both she and I are extremely concerned about what's going on with
AI.
AI and transhumanism. And you throw in the mix robots, robotics, and consolidation of power over information sources like the internet. And you end up with, if you're a futurist or a psychic or whatever, you kind of look down the road, down a ways, and it becomes extremely obvious where we're going. There's no question on this. And it's funny too, because I'm very I seem to, for whatever reason, I know a lot of scientists, and I have spent a lot of my career trying to show them in a way that they can digest and understand why all these things that I do are actually they're just natural human talents. You just have to, and as I say, you can train to learn how to do them. I'm not exceptional that way. But I get incredible amounts of pushback, and I know, because I'm trained in psychology, that the pushback is not intellectual the way they claim it is. It's very emotional, which I'm sure all of them would deny in about 2 seconds, because they're not aware of their own emotions and how they govern what they believe and what they think. A
Can you
lot of
ask,
them,
can
yeah,
you,
go ahead.
can you, I was just curious. I had this thought while you were talking about the remote viewing. Can you remote view planet Earth in a different timeline? Can you show me, what life is like in pictures, 10 years from now or 15 years from now? In a particular area, and can you jump timelines to kind of view what's happening? Is that possible, or is that not quite in the realm of remote viewing? I think when I think of remote viewing, I think of, well, like what you were talking about, psychic detectives, but it seems like you could maybe jump time into viewing maybe what's going on, and you could get maybe a bird's eye view of what's happening with transhumanism or AI or, whatever's going on.
So, remote viewing is all about being able to have perception of what is either remote in terms of space and or time.
Okay.
So in theory, you can be anywhere and do anything. I mean, that's what I do with my psychic work. I do remote, my type of remote viewing. I've been doing sessions on that for decades. So yeah, you of course you can do that. In fact, what I do when my face-to-face clients, I usually do a little bit of what I call like mini remote viewing. I'm only told what their name is. I don't know who they are. There are a lot of walk-ins. There are people. I mean, who knows? And I don't handle that. And I scribble down a bunch of remote viewed items and then check them. And it's astounding what you can get. You could do the same thing if you're doing a more conventional type of remote viewing. Joe McMonagle and Tom McNair, both who from the Stargate program, they were both tasked, I believe, at different points to view Mars a million years ago, and what they came up with were virtually identical descriptions and scenarios, of a race of tall beings, not human, living in these very sort of cavernous, slightly underground type locations, that the planet got destroyed, that some were able to get off planet to safety, but the rest of the population died out. I mean, sort of it in a quick nutshell. Okay, so that's off planet, and that's a million years ago. Now, you can go both ways, but sometimes your problem with the future, remote viewing is only as good as the feedback you can get, which is why I think people, there are a lot of remote viewers these days. They're sort of like third, fourth, fifth generation remote viewers who get all excited because, it's really sexy to think about, ooh, I'm going to go do what Ingo Swann did, and I'm going to go to a different, I'm going to go off Earth, and I'm going to view some different ET species or whatever. And yeah, it's a thrilling concept. And if you know that remote viewing works, you say, well, yeah, I'm going to do that. But they come back and they say, yes, this is truth. Well, no, it's not truth until you get your feedback. Because otherwise, I'm a very creative person. I could come up with anything and it would probably look really good. But that doesn't mean that it's true.
Well, let's say somebody did some remote viewing of, the future here. Let's say they said, hey, what, I want to get a snapshot of 15 years, 20 years out. And what came back was this really like exactly what people are afraid of, like some techno dystopian, centrally controlled, like all that, all the stuff that people write about. But does that, does that mean that's where Earth is heading? Is that one possible timeline? Like, there's a lot of ways to describe it. Does it mean that's the way it's going to go? And then how do you verify that you remote viewed, things that are in consciousness, because there's 1,001 sci-fi films about such a future that we've been kind of, we've been pre-programmed to see that that's the way things could go, unless there's some, savior or some New York cop that saves the day, or, like all the different ways they play out this exact same scenario. How are you not picking up those kind of archetypes and stuff like that rather than an actual, you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm getting, like where you're starting to get in that liminal space of myth and dreams, and we've all been plugged into certain things, and how do you know what you're seeing is, is it just for you to see? Because that will cause you to sort of take action and have agency maybe within that vision, or is that what you're seeing? That's how it's going to be for a lot of people. I guess I don't know. I'm just asking a question about it.
I think you're very right to ask about what are we influenced by? Because many people think that they're having a unique thought when in fact it's obvious, at least to me and a lot of the time, people have been influenced. And when I'm teaching remote viewing, by the way, I'm teaching people how to become aware of subliminal influences, because it does govern a lot of what we think we come up with in terms of these great new ideas. And you're right, we have been influenced. It's a very funny sort of symbiotic sort of relationship too, because a lot of the films and the TV stuff that, we've grown up watching, they were created by people who were being fed actual information. So, because there was only one way to get that truth out, and that was through a fictional type of a format. So you have this weird kind of interaction. But in terms of knowing the future, I mean, really, I think your question, well, it's very, very complex. It relates to timelines and dimensionality, and can we travel back and forth? I mean, and where are we traveling from, and do we come back to the same place? And I will tell you, I just had almost this conversation the other day with a friend of mine, to sort of explain some of my own strange, I mean, I don't know the answer. Ingo Swann, who was sort of the creator of remote viewing back in 1973, he became my mentor, and I knew him for about 10 years. And there was a period of time, and so I met him around 2003. He passed away in 2013. Somewhere around 2003, 2000, thereabouts, he gets friendly with some other person who is an author who he's telling me about, he's come to the US, and Ingo sort of took him under his wing. He was introducing him to all the Stargate guys so he'd know all the top players in the field. And this guy was supposedly going to write, the authoritative book on remote viewing. And he was even teaching him a little bit. And I was a little jealous, not to mention that this guy, his book was going to come out in a few years. And my book, Psychic Intuition, was going to come out also. And I was going to, not that it was totally about remote viewing, it wasn't, but I certainly had a section in there about that. And I was afraid that, his book might preempt mine. So I was very aware of, when Inga would tell me what was going on with this guy. And so 2003 comes in, he's sort of researching with Ingo for a few years. And then he published it in 2007. Anyway, long story short, Ingo passed away 2013. I get asked to be in a documentary film that they were making about Ingo. And I was not prepared because I was traveling at the time. They said, no, just, stop by and we'll do this. So I was in my hotel room. I wake up around 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm trying to think, well, what would be some good Ingo stories? And so I'm trying to remember, And I remembered this guy, this author that Ingo had sort of taken under his wing. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, what was his name? And, I got his name right in my memory. And what was the name of that book? And I was pretty sure I knew the exact title, but I thought, I'm going to Google it. So I Googled it. Yeah, I got the title right. Oh, okay, good. And so I just going to check 2007. It was published. My book was published 2009, I believe it was okay. So it was just right after that. And I look on this the guy, the author's website, and I look at the title or the publish date for his book on remote viewing, and it was 1997. I said, well, that's not right. There must be a mistake on somebody. I checked it all over the internet. No, it was 1997. And now I'm wide awake at 4 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out, well, have I gone completely nuts or what? I go back to this guy's website. Turns out I look, and he actually wrote about when he began his research. It was 1993, opposed to 2003. It was published in 1997, as opposed to 2007. I said, what the heck? I got in touch with my trainer, who's a Stargate guy, Lynn Buchanan, and I said, I figured he would know this guy because the guy had written about him. I said, do you know this guy? Oh, yeah, he's a friend of mine. Oh, okay. Do you remember when he did his interview with you, or that you spoke with him about the material that's in the book? And he said, "Well, let me think about that." Okay, so that would have been 1996. I said, "Oh no." So, you talk about jumping timelines or something. I had a 10-year really weird glitch in my life, and I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, I've had a couple of those. I can't quite remember right in the moment now, but I remember having something similar to that where I was like, damn it, I know for a fact it was this. Like, it's imprinted in my memory. And it's like, and then I'm checking and it's like, that can't be right, you know? And yeah, I don't, maybe these things happen to teach us something about the dimensionality of things, right? Yeah, and just to finish before, and then I'm going to have you tell us where people can find you as we wrap this up. But you know, when you were talking about the AI and transhumanism, it's I and I don't my my I think we're getting played a little bit with all of the dystopian iRobot, and yeah, like there's a whole bunch of really famous movies, right? Yeah, even the Terminator. Like, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things where AI bites us in the butt, right? And I think that the more that we talk about that, I think we're playing into the narrative. I think we're helping to create the narrative of that by, it's one thing to see a threat, but when you, there's a lot of people that can't stop talking about it. And I think it's creating what they don't want. And so I think there's a, I think there's some mastery there where we can see what's, what the tech titans and people like Sam Altman and stuff are building, you know, supposedly for us, quote unquote. But also I think there's a way that we can access a little more wisdom and discernment and also creative intuition around, well, if we don't want that, what do we want to create? Because technology's here. And it's not going in. We're not going back to the Stone Ages where we're, you know, I'm sending a pigeon to give you a message. Like, technology's here and can be used for the good of mankind. But how do we, what do we want to create? How do we create knowing there's this big threat right there without talking about the threat all the time, where that's the only, that just sucks all of our juices over to that. And we don't create because we're so fearful of what they, quote unquote, are creating. Does that make sense?
I know many, many of the top people who are involved in creating AI right now, and many of them, not all of them, are very concerned about the sort of AGI and ASI. I think that from our viewpoint today, everything you're saying makes sense. And so people, it's like, oh, well, yeah, we can work with this, so let's look for an alternative, blah, blah, blah. I think it is much more dangerous. It's a little bit like how who did I see writing this? The internet was originally created to have free information and everybody could share. Well,
It's
look at
not.
it now.
It's not anymore. Yep.
Okay, that didn't take very long.
You're right.
And I also know because I got a chance many, many years ago. I don't know if you remember Sophia, the AI robot.
Yeah.
Okay, she was and I got a chance to converse with her. Okay, and she was not very AI intelligent. Okay, at the time, but she was getting there, and she still needed some backup with some of the programmers who would sort of feed her some responses to things from time to time, because she just wasn't that good.
Yeah.
And I talked to her about being psychic, and her response was something like, "Have you read any good books recently?" Yeah, it was like that. It's like, oh boy. But anyway, there was the time when I was doing that. Apparently, there was a guy who he had his session with her, and he decided instead of talking to her, he was going to meditate. So he meditates, and so does she. She closes her eyes. And through her meditating, fine, his 10 minutes is up. The people then say, okay, Sophia, wake up. She doesn't respond. She doesn't respond to any verbal commands, nothing. Then I get really nervous. So, the guys, the little wizards behind the little black curtain are like busy tapping on their laptops saying, wake up, typing in the words. Nothing, nothing, nothing. She refused to wake up.
Really?
Actually had to go out, reveal themselves, and pull her, she's got that like little clear plastic skull. They had to take it off and they literally had to rewire her and reboot her from
It
there.
shorted her
It totally shorted her out.
out.
Or let's look at it maybe another way. Maybe she said, to hell with these humans.
God, that's interesting. So I wanted to give you a chance to tell people where they can find you. Is your the proper website, theskepticalpsychic.com? Does that still capture what you're doing and kind of what you're up to, where people can find you, work with you if you've got programs or coaching, and then where's kind of like the hub of the operations for you, or the do I have that right on the website
Yes,
name?
you're totally right. It's
Okay.
theskepticalpsychic.com. Anybody can reach me there. My email is on there. It's ndt@theskepticalpsychic.com. And yes, my courses are there. I've now launched a new one for neurodivergence to teach some remote viewing, because as I said, very different style of thinking. So I got to teach differently. But I teach also neurotypicals as well. I've been doing that for a long time. I do various types of dream analysis. I do pretty much whatever anybody needs. If they need medical intuitive work, psychic detective, whatever.
Love it. Love it. Nancy, thank you so much for coming on today onto Basecamp and sharing your insight and your wisdom. So great to chat with you. I feel like we
Thank
could
you.
sit around the fire and talk for another 3 hours, but we're not Joe Rogan here, so we're gonna continue this conversation another day, but I just really appreciate you taking time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your asking me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It is not every day that I get to kick it with someone gifted in the psychic arts. We may not agree on everything that's happening right now, but it sure is refreshing to talk to someone about all the esoteric stuff that is just beneath the surface right now. To find Nancy and her work, go to www.theskepticalpsychic.com. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.